everybody that came out on Friday for the documentary screening. We had an evening called The Heart of Immigration. We had some discussions, some panel members who shared information with us. It was a really wonderful evening. Thank you so much for coming. We've got some pictures, I think, here. And that evening was run by our Guatemala team and also our economic justice team. And somebody from that team, that economic justice team, is going to come up here in a moment, and also from our racial reconciliation team, just to share with us, because during the season of Lent, we've been emphasizing different areas of our church, as you know, from two perspectives, really. One is to kind of share the information and inspire us about the amazing things that are happening in our church community, and also to inspire us to give, because we've got these higher goals during the Lent season for giving. And actually, just check out the back of the flyer. You've probably got one of these when you came in, and you'll see that we are bang on course with those higher goals, right? We're at 100% for year to date. We've had a little bit of up and down through this season, but mostly up. So thank you, everybody, for continuing to give so generously. Let's keep it up for the remainder of this season. And without further ado, I'm going to invite Tineke and Sarah to come up, and they're going to share with us a little bit about economic justice and racial reconciliation. So let's give them a warm welcome.
Hey, good morning. My name is Tineke, and I serve here on the economic justice outreach partnerships we have. I have some pictures that are going to kind of run as I talk, and then I'm going to be very modern and read from my phone, actually. So I grew up here in Burtonsville, and even though this is a very transient area, I run into people from Burtonsville and Silver Spring all the time. So that happened to me about a month ago at an event. A woman and I were both volunteering in Silver Spring, and we kind of got to chatting, which I do because I'm obnoxious and I chat with everybody. And so we were chatting, and we realized we had some mutual friends. We actually went to the same high school, and then she shared that she has children at Greencastle Elementary School close by one of our neighbors. And so I told her a little bit about Cedar Ridge and some of the work that we're doing there. And her expression changed a little bit. And so I kind of kept going, but I thought maybe I hit a nerve or something. But she was very vulnerable with me and shared that she and her family have actually been recipients of some of the programs that we support. So we had an awesome conversation. We shared contact information. And then I reached out to her about a week ago and asked if she'd be willing to share her story. And so she did. So I'm going to read an email she just shot me this week, and then I'm going to share a little bit about how your financial giving has impacted the programs that we're partnering with, and then how you can get a little bit more involved if you'd like to. So this is from TG. I'm not going to tell you her name. She says, I start by saying thank you to all the members who have invested their time, donations, and warm hearts to the programs that help our families, who assist families who are less fortunate. There comes a time in our lives where we are faced with financial hardship or emotional circumstances that interfere with our ability to keep smiles on the faces of our family members. During these moments, it is a blessing to have the resources available to take some of the pressure off parents. When I couldn't afford to buy presents for my children for Christmas, the donations you provided were able to put smiles on my children's faces. This way, my children didn't realize how much we were suffering financially. When I needed food for Thanksgiving, your donations were available to help me prepare a meal that, once again, I was truly thankful for. Your donations have helped me have successful holidays. I attended the Strengthening Families program through Linkages at Greencastle Elementary, and the weekly meetings were held in the evening, which would have taken me away from my children and preparing for dinner. But Cedar Ridge has provided meals that were donated during those sessions to help me worry less about what they'd be eating for dinner and focus more on the valuable information provided during the program. As a special education paraeducator here in the county, I witness all the hard work teachers put in to your children during the school year. I reassure you that your contributions to teachers provide the validation their hard work is acknowledged and appreciated. So please know that I and all the other families that you have helped truly appreciate all of your kind and helpful gestures. Thank you for contributing to be a substantial impact on our families. Warm regards, TG. So it was pretty amazing that our paths crossed. I do hear stories, personal stories, that Marshall shares with me, the Linkages to Learning Outreach Coordinator. But it was very vulnerable and touching to hear it straight from her. And so we're going to keep in touch, and I think she's going to come visit. So those are pictures that are running for some of the programs we're doing. I have a few slides that I'll kind of go through about what our work is. So if you could put on the first one. So what we do on the economic justice team, or economic justice outreach, our main kind of three focuses are contributing to food, local food programs to help those experiencing food insecurity, We partner with local organizations serving those experiencing hardship. So organizations that are already kind of set up and running and doing work on the ground, we're partnering along with them. And then we encourage our community to learn more about economic justice. So things like the documentary screening that we had on Friday, and then we've had other documentary screenings, book readings, and information when we kind of talk like this, and you can dig a little more. So those are our three focuses. I'm not going to read this whole list, but these are ways that the community can engage. I'll be out in the lobby, so if you want more information, I can talk to you in person. I can also put this on the Facebook page. And if you go to the Cedar Ridge website, there's information about some of the individual programs we're doing. But if you have time and energy and you want to chip in, please come find me and I'll put you to work. And then on the last one, and this is why we're talking today, why your giving is so important. So we have giving kind of in two ways for the economic justice team. Tons of in-kind giving. So you guys have been over generous and giving the food kits for the food and backpack program, donating food and supplies for Sophia's house, for Greencastle, for Thanksgiving baskets and Christmas. So in-kind donations have been pretty fabulous. But financial offering is also fabulous. We will take your cash and put it to good work. So there's kind of the list of some of the things that we've purchased this year using your amazing, generous donations. So gift cards for families in need, bins for transporting all our food that we're donating, fresh produce to add to the Thanksgiving baskets, supplies and donations for our service days, which is coming up soon, so we'll talk more about that in the coming weeks, and then supplies for documentary screenings and other things we're doing. So thank you very much for your support. Your money is going to serve our local community in really powerful ways, so thank you very much.
Wow. Good morning. My name is Sarah Clark, and I am with the Racial Reconciliation Team. Many of you know that Cedar Ridge has been really on a journey for the past several years to figure out what God is calling us to do to take action on issues of economic and racial injustice that are rife in our community and in this world. You probably have heard those topics. They've been covered in various messages through various series over the past several years, and those are messages, and we are informed by scripture on what we can do and how we can take action. Of course, while we're trying to get organized to take this action, you know, things keep happening in the world that I'm sure we're all aware of that point out the need to take action. So there was a time when the shootings in Charleston happened, and our church congregated outside to pray together about that. And there have been more recent incidents, and even just paying attention in the local news about some of the things that are happening in education and what is happening with kids who maybe aren't getting the kind of education that they need and deserve, and what the factors are that influence that. In the past year, we've engaged in a number of activities that many of you have participated in. We did a half-day workshop that sort of focused on how U.S. history relates to what's happening in today's headlines, so a little bit of a connection between ripped from the headlines and where did all that come from. We've also organized a couple of book studies where we were focusing either on the criminal justice system or inequities in education. And I would say if you haven't had a chance to read Brian Stevenson's book, Just Mercy, I invite all of you to do that, and I have a copy I'd be happy to loan you. We have decided to focus on education. Part of our process in the past couple of years has been figuring out, in just such a big, big issue in so many areas to take action, where can we focus? So kind of being inspired by the Guatemala team and the deliberative process that they went through to kind of form and figure out what to do. Rachel Anderson led a group of folks from Cedar Ridge through a kind of research and action piece where we were learning about education issues in Maryland. We talked to folks from the Greencastle Elementary team to kind of get some firsthand understanding of how the issues that we're looking at show up in Greencastle and what's happening there and practical ways to take action. And these are really tough issues, of course, and we realize that these are things that we cannot address alone. So there are a number of ways that you can be involved. First of all, a really easy one is on the fourth Sunday of every month, the prayer team organizes a 15-minute prayer circle focused on racial reconciliation at the front of the congregation, and that always is 15 minutes max, so come on up and join us. You can also pray not with us in that circle, but throughout the month and in ongoing ways. There's always a committee to join, so if you would like to be a part of the team that is kind of figuring out and planning action, we welcome you. And then I would also like to highlight that we're planning another workshop after the summer. We'll let you know when the date is. But that workshop is focused on helping us to build cross-racial relationships and to prepare us to take specific action related to racism in education. And this time we are working with a couple of folks, Alexi Lushkin from Kingdom Mission Society, and then Reverend Brenda Gerton Mitchell. Both are Christian leaders who are organizing in the wider church community on these types of issues. And Reverend Brenda Gerton Mitchell most recently served as the director of the Center for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships at the Department of Education. So we know we will get good information and hear from a lot of her experiences. And we hope that you will join us for that series and bring someone with you. It will be for Cedar Ridge and for other folks to join us. I'll say on a personal note, these issues of racial injustice, you know, they show up in the community where I live. I live in Bowie in Prince George's County. They show up in the work I do, which is focused on conservation and the environment. I know they show up in the school system where my daughter is enrolled in Prince George's County and where Hubert is a teacher in Washington, D.C. So as a Christian, I would say one of the things that really inspires me is to be a part of a church that is having these conversations, devoting time and resources to really trying to take action. And I have been, I would say, inspired and motivated to kind of keep on going and to grow in this area. So for me, having a home base and having it in my church, that's a place where I want to do this work where I can be my whole self. And I can't really imagine being a part of a church that kind of compartmentalizes these issues and sort of puts them to the side. So I know many of you are faithful givers and your resources support this work. It's part of the reason why I joyfully give to Cedar Ridge through that fabulous app that Steve has arranged. And I invite and encourage all of you to do that. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks so much, guys. So we're going to continue on with our series. As you know, it's Lent, and we're in this series called Creating Safe Space. And today, the title is Becoming a Safe Person. Or actually, if you look closely, I think the title for today is Becoming a Safe Person. The challenge group that we have going on related to this subject is called Becoming a Safer Person. And I think that's actually pretty significant, because is anybody really safe, you know, 100% safe? You know, I think that's probably a very fluid, dynamic thing, right? We've all probably at times felt unsafe with people who are good people. We've probably also maybe have known that we're not safe ourselves, or people have said that we're not safe. We've also all probably felt safe in certain situations. So, you know, in a way, this is all about, it's very subjective, I think. It's very fluid, it's dynamic. So this idea of becoming safer, I think, is where we need to focus. How can, we may be a very safe person, we may be not so safe. We may feel safe, we may not feel so safe. But can we together and individually work at becoming safer? And I think there's work for all of us to do there, right, as human beings. I mentioned the challenge groups. We have, throughout this series, four different challenge groups going on. We plugged those just a moment ago in the announcements, and we'll plug them again at the end. There's still time to join a group. So those started last week. They're running for 3 weeks in total, so there's still two weeks remaining. So if you'd like to join a group, you know, there's information about them in the flyer that you got this morning. Check those out. Come along after the service to the relevant room. And, you know, as I mentioned, the topic of today, becoming a safer person, has a challenge group associated with it. Colleen and Raphael are running that. There'll be, I think it's 204 or 203, the room just around the corner here, where they'll be hosting that. And so today, you know, I'm just going to kind of scratch the surface on this topic, but if that stirs something up in you or you want to explore it more, go on to that group, and they're really wrestling with a lot of really great issues. So, you know, that's true for all the different challenge groups too. Okay, so coming back to this issue of becoming a safer person, as I mentioned, I think it's a relatively fluid thing, right? Something that we all need to work at. you know, as an example, I love nobody more on this planet than my wife. You know, there's no doubt about that. And that's the place where I feel the safest. But I'm also conscious that even in that context, I can sometimes, I recognize that I'm not safe. Because it's like the stakes are higher, right? When you love somebody more, the stakes go up. And we become more sensitive, we're more vulnerable at times to being hurt. And I know that there's been times, even though I love my wife more than anybody else, that I know that I think, I'm in an emotional place here where I don't think I can really be safe. And I need to just back away a little bit. I don't need to say those things. I don't need to, there's a boundary that we put down, right? And that's part of this whole issue of being safe, is recognizing the boundaries that we need for ourselves and the boundaries that we need for one another. And that is all intimately connected with being safe. So you know, it's moving all the time. And I think we're all making decisions about where we can find safety, right? Everybody's doing that, I think, whether it's here, whether it's in our families, whether it's at work. People are kind of intuitively working out where is it safe. And sometimes, you know, some people will be safe around certain issues, but they may not feel so safe around others, right? We might have experienced that. We're okay talking to somebody about one subject, but maybe not about the other. It may not work out. So as we work all this out, or as we're working it all out, what if we could become, as followers of Jesus, more consistently safe and secure people? Perhaps we could create space around us, wherever we are, in our families, in our workplaces, where it becomes easier for people to be their true selves. That would be a wonderful thing. So what we're going to do this morning, as I said, is just unpack a few things, just address a few issues related to this subject, and then we're going to, you know, if you want to go to that group afterwards, I'd really encourage you to do so. I want to start off with some statements. So this is sort of a simpleton like me's analysis of humanity. We looked at this a few weeks ago or a few months ago, and it's basically this: look, all people are nuts, right? And so are we. Like, we all have our issues, we all have our trouble, we all have our problems, we all have our craziness. There's not one of us in the room is exempt from that, right? So we see that in everybody else, and we also need to see that actually we're like that too. Okay, so that can perhaps give us a sense of empathy for other people who maybe don't feel safe. It can also help us realize that actually, you know, not everybody is safe. So, you know, we should measure our expectations, right? We need to be thoughtful and wise about this as we approach other people. Everyone, though, has a story, right? The reason we're all nuts is because we've all got a story. There's always a backstory, and we don't know half of it. In other words, that person that we find difficult, that person who's struggling, or that person who perhaps doesn't feel safe, they've got a whole backstory that we probably don't understand anything about. And so part of this goal of becoming safer is that we would actually become better empathizers, better listeners, more able to hear that story, understand that story, and also perhaps get a little bit more in touch with our own story, because we've got that story, right? We have a reason why we are the way we are, for good or for bad. And perhaps we, through, as we pursue being safer, we could get to share some more of our story in a more vulnerable kind of way, which is then an invitation, really, for other people to share theirs. And then finally, everyone's doing their best. Okay, so if, you know, that, sometimes you question that, right? But if we at least believe that in all the interactions we have, that even though people are nuts, and even, you know, people have this story, people are doing their best. That's going to give us an opportunity to enter into the engagement in a much more confident way, in a much more positive way, than if we're actually believing the worst about that other person. So all people are nuts. Everyone has a story. Everyone's doing their best. It's like, perhaps, you know, they're little, you know, humorous, bizarre statements, but I think we can all probably relate to those as in some way being true. So in the context of all that, knowing that that's true about everybody around us, it's also true about ourselves, we're leaning into this journey of being safer. And I want to come back again, you know, at the risk of sounding repetitive, to a scripture that we've looked at many times during this series and many times before, and it's the one in Matthew 11. We'll read it from the Message this time only, where Jesus is inviting us into this journey, right? We, with all these subjects we've been talking about, I think it'd be very easy for us to beat ourselves up. Say, oh, I'm not there yet. I'm not good enough. I'm not authentic enough, or I'm not safe enough, or I'm not helping marginalized people enough. Well, I think Jesus is saying, don't beat yourself up. Lean into me. Grow. We need a change. We absolutely need a change. We need to hear that challenge. We need to respond to that challenge. But it's going to be okay. Let's grow together. And here's what Jesus says. Are you tired? Are you worn out? Are you burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. So in all of this, we're looking to Jesus to help us to grow. So let's just look at one or two issues here. The first thing I want to say about becoming a safer person is this. Perhaps the greatest thing we can do to become safer is to work at ourselves, right? To work at our own issues. Last week, Ruth talked about being an authentic person and the challenge of authenticity with ourselves. And authenticity is this very vulnerable thing, right? To be really honest with ourselves, let alone really honest with other people and open about ourselves with other people, is a huge challenge. It's a reflection of great vulnerability. The other side of that, the sort of partner of authenticity, is what we might call integrity. It's the effort, the intention to having been authentic about ourselves to change, right? So for instance, you know, I might confess, I might say, you know, I'm a really angry person. I have a problem with anger, and you know, you just need to put up with it. You just need to deal with it because that's the way I am. I mean, that's very authentic, right? It's very honest, and it's very, and we might actually demand or hope to be accepted, and that would be a good thing, to be accepted. You know, angry people should be accepted, like everybody else with all their faults. But there's something missing there. There's something that's not really that vulnerable about that authenticity, because it's saying basically, you know, that's as far as I'm going to go. Okay, I'm being honest about it, but it would be even more vulnerable to say, you know, I'm working at changing. I want to change, and I'm working at change. That leads us into a different level of vulnerability, because whenever you work at anything, whenever you attempt anything, especially personal issues, right, you stand to fail. You stand to get embarrassed. I mean, what if I don't change? What if once I've stated the intention of change, people might hold me to account on that, it's like, you know, if I just don't do anything, I can't fail. So it's another level of vulnerability to actually work at the issues that we understand about ourselves through our authenticity with self and authenticity with others. So that's why we spend a lot of time here at City Ridge trying to work on spiritual growth, trying to help with different practices and different ways of growing to become better people, to grow into fuller people, the kind of people that I think Jesus is imagining we can be if we partner with Christ and walk that way that Jesus was talking about just a moment ago. So as we do that, as we lean into that vulnerability of change and work at ourselves, several things are going to start happening. First of all, we're going to become healthier, right? That itself is going to make us safer. The more secure we are, the less reactive we are, the more likely we are going to be safe for other people. When people come to us with criticism or they come to us with just a need and a challenge, we're not going to be thrown off kilter anywhere near as much if we've actually worked at some of our own issues ourselves. So just becoming healthier will inevitably make us safer. But also as we work at our own issues, I think that helps us empathize more, right? As we open up and actually engage in a change process, we recognize that we are wounded, and we can become wounded healers. Like we're not just perfect people trying to fix everybody else. We're imperfect people working at our own issues. We're way more empathetic in that situation. You know, a very practical example of this. I back in my medical days, I used to treat a lot of children with who first got diagnosed with diabetes. Many of you know my oldest daughter herself got diagnosed with diabetes as a young child, you know, type 1 insulin-dependent diabetes. She's recently had a lot of trouble with that and has been in the hospital. But I remember when my daughter got diagnosed, it was a way different experience to me diagnosing all those other kids and interacting with the parents and just saying, well, you know, here's, I really empathize with you. This is really, you know, let's work through this. It was a totally different experience being on the other side of the fence. So when we've experienced brokenness ourselves, when we've experienced failure, when we've experienced working at things, when we've experienced suffering, when all the different things that go into making us who we are and the sort of challenges that we have to face, those almost inevitably make us, if we're real about it and authentic about it, make us more empathetic with other people. And we use that term, you know, wounded healers. We're wanting to help others, but we're not coming from the perspective of superiority. We're coming from the perspective of a fellow struggler, a fellow sufferer, a fellow broken person, if you like. So, we're going to become more empathetic as we work at our own issues. We're also, I think, by working at our own issues and being vulnerable about that, we're inviting other people into sort of imperfect space, if you like. We're saying, hey, imperfection's okay. I'm imperfect, and I'm working at my stuff, and that is, by extension, an invitation to other people to say, okay, maybe it's safe to be imperfect then. Maybe it's safe to have a problem. Maybe it's safe to be somebody who's not where they should be. And then the extension of that it's an invitation into honesty, right? It's an invitation into change. It's not saying, being safe isn't being a person who says, just stay exactly how you are. I mean, that acceptance means accepting people where they're at, right? That's an important part of safety. But it's not the whole thing with safety. It's saying change is possible. It means it's an invitation into honesty to say, look, I'm being honest with myself. By extension, you can be honest about yourself. You can be honest about where you need a change. And it becomes a creative space. It becomes a space where movement can happen, transformation can happen, rather than a space where it's like, you're accepted, just stay right where you are. That's, you know, there's going to be no challenge, no change. I don't think that's what people want, ultimately. People want to grow and be transformed. People want freedom. People want life, the kind of life that Jesus was talking about. So working on ourselves is a big deal. Let's think a little bit about Jesus in this context, because Jesus was somebody, I think, if we're committed to following Jesus here, I think we would say Jesus was a safe person. But something we talked about at the beginning of this series was the difference between safety and comfort, right? Safe space, and a little bit along the lines of what we were talking about just now of, you know, an invitation into honesty, might feel very uncomfortable, because in that when it's safe to be yourself, when it's safe to be honest, we're going to see things that are going to be uncomfortable for us. When it becomes safe, people might be able to challenge us in an atmosphere of safety, and that's going to create some discomfort, right? So with Jesus, we see that all the time. Jesus is a very safe person, so he's got people from all different walks of life who are drawn to him, who connect with him, who he includes. But we've also recently read some scriptures about Jesus challenging the heck out of people. You know, like the woes that to the Pharisees and the lawmakers that we read a few weeks ago at the beginning of the series. It's uncomfortable to be around Jesus. I think that discomfort was for insiders, the people on the inside, people in Jesus' circle. Jesus kind of raised the bar with those people. You know, with his immediate followers, some of them left, some of them withdrew, because he was holding us to an account, to a level of love, a level of acceptance that was really, really hard and really, really challenging. At the same time, I think there was that discomfort for people on the outside. Jesus was inviting people in, but also challenging people, especially, you know, as we know, this sort of ongoing challenge with the religious authorities as a way to appeal to them to change, to come on in. So that with Jesus, we have this unique sort of safety, but actually very uncomfortable as well. And to sort of illustrate that, I want to look at just one verse in the at the very beginning of John's Gospel, and the sort of section we read a lot at Christmas time. It's from that section that begins, "In the beginning was the Word." This is from verse 14. It says, "The Word," so that's, you know, clearly the writer of John is referring to Jesus in this instance. "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth." And I just want to touch on the three words there, really: dwelling or dwell, and then grace and truth. Okay, so this is really the whole book of John is a very philosophical book, right? So, and this is a very philosophical statement in some respects, but it's also a very practical statement. It's sort of an eyewitness statement, because John is written not necessarily by an eyewitness themselves, but using eyewitness accounts. So this isn't just philosophical. This is like the way Jesus really was. I mean, told a certain way, okay? Like with all the Gospels, the stories are told a certain way. So there's something idealistic about this, but also something very practical. And this issue of dwelling and grace and truth, let's look at that for a moment. So Jesus dwells with us, okay? When we think about Jesus as a safe person, I mean, for starters, Jesus is just with people. There's this compassionate presence with people, right? We see that in Jesus' life. He's interacting with people all over the place. Now, at times, he has to back off, because it's like, even for Jesus, it's like, whoa, that's too much interaction. It's too much dwelling going on. But Jesus is out there. And that gets pretty messy, right? So part of what we've got to wrestle with here about being safe people is, can we be present to people? And we have to recognize our own limits in all this. But just think about our lives, the kind of people we're interacting with in our families, in our homes, in work, in neighborhoods, at school, etc. What is our state of dwelling with those people? I mean, are we kind of very removed from them, lots of barriers up, or are we open? Are we even looking to create safe space around us in those contexts? And are we willing for the kind of messiness that's going to bring? Think about Jesus, all the messiness that was created around Jesus' life. I mean, some of it kind of very hostile messiness, some of it was just misunderstanding. I mean, if we're going to be vulnerable, if we're going to open up, if we're going to be dwelling, you know, create this sense of dwelling with people, we're going to have messiness around us. We'll be misunderstood. We may be accused of different things. We may be misrepresented. We may be positively challenged, you know, in good ways. I mean, it's all good and bad, right? That can happen. That's going to be messy. So, you know, we might start getting feedback about ourselves even, and it, like, oh, well, I wasn't ready for that. How do I want to handle this? So, you know, are we ready for that messiness? Are we willing to be open to that messiness? With this issue of grace, I don't think that's too hard for us to comprehend about Jesus. Maybe to internalize it is much harder. But we're kind of familiar with Jesus is accepting. Jesus is loving. We've talked a lot about God is love, and Jesus is the manifestation of love. Jesus is the fullness of God. Jesus is the perfect representation of oneness with God, and that flows out of Jesus' acceptance and love, and what we would call grace, where there's sort of seeing beyond people's faults and seeing into what might be possible in somebody's life. So, can we follow the example of Jesus and be full of grace and be accepting and look beyond perhaps the initial interact, perhaps look to the fact that this person might seem nuts, but they've got a story, right? And Jesus was constantly engaging with people and hearing their stories, and sometimes he seemed to just intuit people's stories. You know, he would interact with somebody and seem to know what was going on. And is that just sort of some kind of divine inspiration, or is that Jesus was just really tuned in to people? Could be either. Maybe it's both. But either way, there's that grace connection that seems a crucial part of what it means to be a safe person, where we're not judging, we're not dismissing other people. And then there's this issue of truth, and this is sort of perhaps the other side of grace. They're not opposites. They're both part of the same dynamic, but Jesus was really honest. We've just talked a minute ago about the fact that Jesus was very challenging. Jesus didn't mince his words. Jesus was very loving. He wasn't disrespectful or kind of dismissive or just, I don't care what I say, I'm just going to, you know. But Jesus was very honest. And so this issue of honesty, let's think about that for a moment and what it, how that impacts us being safe. Honesty, as we mentioned earlier, is about authenticity, right? It's about being honest about ourselves and that being an invitation to others to be honest. Honest is also going into the vulnerable space of speaking the truth. And you know, sometimes that is really hard, right? To say what we think is right in a given instance. Now, most of the time, truth-telling about other people is probably none of our business whatsoever, right? I think most of the time. If somebody else has got a problem or somebody else is annoying us, it's really not our place to say anything. Sometimes it's kind of our responsibility to say something. We might be parents or, you know, in families or you know, we have responsibilities in workplaces, or maybe it's an issue of injustice where we're compelled to speak out. And there's, you know, that can be uncomfortable, right? We don't necessarily want to do that, but it's our responsibility to do it. So we have to do it. And but whenever we do it, whenever we do that, and whenever we're called to do that, we have to do that in love, right? This is the connection back to grace, that if we're doing it out of judgment, if we're doing it out of defensiveness, if we're doing it out of whatever spirit it is, that doesn't feel safe. But Jesus seems to be able to tell the truth and communicate that in this empowering way that creates space for people to be transformed, for people to change. And as we said earlier, isn't that what people want? You get this sense that people around Jesus are longing for something more, longing for something different. They want life. They want to be set free. And many of the people that Jesus engaged with and shared truth with responded in this amazingly positive, beautiful way. But obviously we also know that some people walked away from that. And even some people went a step further and persecuted Jesus. Even, you know, think about what happened to Jesus in the end. So it gets messy, right? It doesn't always work out necessarily the way we want it to be. But we've got these dwelling, grace, and truth elements that seem to be the constituents of safety as manifest by Jesus as he's engaging with people in daily life. I want to just talk for a moment, just sort of transition there a little bit to perhaps emphasizing more this dwelling issue at a practical level and talk a little bit about compassionate presence. Okay, so at a practical level, and again, we're just scratching the surface on these issues this morning, and I really encourage you to go to that group, you know, if you want to really dig more into some of this stuff. But this, I want to just focus, there's many issues we could focus on, but I want to focus on one of them, which is compassionate presence. We get an opportunity in our lives, because of our daily activity, to practice compassionate presence. In other words, like, we're probably not going to get up tomorrow morning and sort of get up and say, right, I'm going to go out to be a safe person, and this way, that way, and the other way, and take on the you know, 27 safety projects or whatever. It's like, how do you go about doing that? But we're all going to get up tomorrow morning and go to work or go to school or have some kind of interaction with somebody. And we have this opportunity in that context then to practice compassionate presence. Now, we've talked about compassionate presence quite a lot over the years here. And we, you know, it's related to this whole idea of active listening, deep listening. I think these terms here, warmth, empathy, and respect, will probably be very familiar to us. We've had workshops on these, and you may have been to workshops on listening skills and that kind of thing at work or in other settings. So I don't want to go. I'm not going to talk too much about these. And actually, I've got a little handout here, which you can come and grab off me afterwards, which summarizes some of the things we've talked about over the past few years. And has some sort of practical guidelines that might be helpful if you want a little bit more information about it. I think the challenge group are going to sort of touch on some of these issues too. But let's just think about these things as ways that we might be able to practice being more compassionately present to others. There's this issue of warmth, all right? So how can, we've all read the research, I'm sure, that, you know, when you think about verbal communication, verbal interaction, you know, 55% of that interact is actually nonverbal, right? It's body language, and it's sort of, you know, and we all know that, right? When you're talking with somebody and if they're tutting or they're turning away from you or they're huffing or puffing or rolling their eyes, you know, we're getting the message. It doesn't matter what's being said. And so, you know, body language is a really important issue there. Tone of voice is about another 38% of the interact. So, you know, sort of sarcastic tone or a short, perhaps, you know, impatient tone or harsh tone or whatever. Tone of voice, that's another 38%. That just leaves 7% for the actual words. So the words we choose, their impact in some respect is minuscule compared to body language and tone of voice. And body language and tone of voice are all to do with what's going on the inside, right? It's to do with how mad we are, how upset we are, what we really think of that other person, whether we think they're crazy, whether we care about whether they have a story or not, all that kind of stuff, right? So, and we all know this is, we all own this because that's what we're like. We've experienced it from others and we know we've been like that ourselves. So this issue of warmth is, I think there's a massive deal here because it all affects our, what we might call our affect, right? The way we come across. And so one thing we need to think about is how, like in every daily situation, at work, at school, at home, what is our affect? Are we coming across as open and kind? Are we coming across as short and mean, critical? Are we coming across as loving, empowering? You know, thinking through those things and what, how does that come across? Is it through our body language? Is it through our tone of voice? Is it through what we actually say? Is it, what's going on there? So that's something I think for us to think about, because if we have a more negative, closed off affect, then probably we're not going to feel, even if we're actually good people, we may not feel very safe to others. We're not going to feel very approachable. And we're all different personalities, right? We're all different personalities. So I think this issue is relevant for all kinds of different personalities. For instance, we might be a more emotive kind of person, and our affect could be might be off-putting because we're very verbal and critical and we kind of wear our emotions off on our sleeve, and that might be our challenge, right? We need to just work on that and be conscious of it and be more intentional about it. But likewise, we might be a very withdrawn person, a less emotionally expressive person. And that affect then can communicate withdrawnness, or, you know, I'm not really all that interested, or a sense of, unhelpful mystery, where it's like, what are they really thinking? What are they really feeling, right? And that can be a little off-putting too and a little intimidating. So again, I think this isn't just about outspoken personalities. This is about all of us really thinking through just how do we come across? What's our affect? What's our demeanor? It's intentionally affecting that. Another aspect of this that we've kind of touched on already, I think that's important here, is do we share weakness? Like, or how do we share weakness, right? So, for instance, if going back to working at our own stuff, if we're in a place of self-hatred, you know, when we were talking last week about authenticity with self and being more accepting of self, and we've talked here several times about the importance of self-love. You know, Jesus says, love others as you love yourself. If we've got a negative view of ourselves, often what happens is either we don't talk about imperfection, because it's like we're just so mad at ourselves about it, or when we do, when we fail, or when imperfection comes out, we're super critical of ourselves, we're super condemning of ourselves. And what that communicates is it's not okay to fail, right? So we're making it all about us, but really what we're doing is making it not okay for everybody else. Like if I'm, you know, and let me say, you know, I'm prone to saying, oh, I'm such an idiot, I'm such a failure, oh, I'm, you know, I really messed up, I'm useless, right? But that's not really helpful to anybody around me, even if they agree with it, right? because I'm really saying this is not acceptable. And if it's not acceptable for me, then it's probably not going to be acceptable for you, or I'm not going to accept you. So we have to think about these things. So there's some food for thought there, I think, for all of us about how do we come across? What do we need to change? How can we walk with yoke to Jesus? How can we be invited into change by Jesus around those kinds of issues? The issue of empathy, we've talked about this a fair bit, and it's about putting ourselves in somebody else's skin. It's about seeking first to understand rather than being understood. It's about it's different to sympathy, right? It's not jumping in and if somebody's sharing something with us, some heartache or some difficulty, saying, "Oh, I know exactly what you mean. I've been through that myself." Or if somebody's sharing something with us about how they've been hurt by somebody else, saying, "Yeah, that person's such a jerk, aren't they? I know." That can feel very empowering. It's not really very helpful. And we've talked about mirroring and sort of reflecting back to people rather than putting ourselves in their skin, being owning all their own emotions. We act as a mirror. We reflect back and say, "So what I hear you saying is you're feeling really hurt right now about what happened in that situation, whatever." And again, in this handout, there's some sort of practical guidelines and suggestions for how we might do that better. And then there's respect, right? So respect is acceptance. It's not judging. But an important part of respect is also not trying to save people, right? It's not. Sometimes we're trying to make people feel better because we want to feel better. We've got this person who's bleeding out in front of us, and it's like we feel helpless. Whoa, I've got to solve it. I've got to change it. I'm feeling bad because this person I care about is feeling bad, and really I want to sort them out because I want to feel better, right? And so we've got to respect is saying actually, usually it's another very capable adult in front of us who needs to take responsibility for their own situation. We can help them reflect and see what the situation is and how it's going on, but we're not there to sort them out, right? We're there to empower. That's respect, right? We saying you, and that's where boundaries come in, right? Because the expectation in safe space is not that we will perfectly sort everything out, but that we will be an ally to that person as they walk through their struggle, just as we were just looking at there, Jesus being an ally to us as we're walking through this struggle of life. Okay, want to just close out here with, we're going to do a little prayer exercise, and then we'll have communion. And we're going to do practice something called the welcoming prayer. Again, I feel like this every week, actually. Pretty much anything I've said in the last few minutes